Hello, and welcome to the AMA's Steps Forward podcast series. We'll hear from healthcare leaders nationwide about real-world solutions to the challenges that practices are confronting today. Solutions that help put the joy back into medicine. StepsForward.org.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of the AMA Steps Forward podcast series. This is your host, Dr. C. Chen, Physician Director of Practice Sustainability here at the AMA. Today on our podcast, we're going to be speaking to Dr. Marion Earls, board certified in both general pediatrics and developmental behavioral pediatrics from the American Academy of Pediatrics. Today, Dr. Earls is speaking on behalf of the American Academy of Pediatrics, as the AAP is one of the Behavioral Health Integration Collaborative's organizational members. Thank you so much for being with us today, Dr. Earls.
I'm delighted to be here. It's my favorite topic.
Awesome. So AAP has been a longstanding member of AMA's Behavioral Health Integration Collaborative, which is a group dedicated to catalyzing effective and sustainable integration of behavioral and mental health care into physician practices. Dr. Earls, before we dive in, could you share a little bit more about yourself and your background for our listeners?
Sure. I'm a general pediatrician and developmental behavioral pediatrician, as you mentioned. And really, my interest in mental health started when I became a member of my local AAP chapter. I became a member of our mental health work group, and we worked very closely with our Medicaid partners. We've had a long history of a relationship in this state with our Medicaid partners, and we were able to talk to them about the need for children's mental health folks in practice, and were able in 2001 to get our state to agree to mental health professionals being able to use nonspecific diagnosis codes, particularly for younger kids. While we were waiting for a diagnosis or a full assessment, they would be able to see our patients. This was really crucial because so many situations were that someone had to have a DSM-5 diagnosis in order to receive mental health services and have those paid. So that was a huge step for us. And we also looked at how do we pay for this if people are in practice. So that was pretty early, very early 2000s. And at the time, I found myself as the medical director of a very large safety net practice. We had three sites. All of our patients were under 200% of federal poverty. We had many patients who were immigrants and refugees or were uninsured. And we decided that we wanted to integrate mental health professionals into our practice. We ultimately ended up with 7 LCSWs in our practice who were in clinic with the physicians in the morning huddle, able to talk with a family, brief intervention with a family. Perhaps a perinatal depression screening tool had been positive, or perhaps there had been some concern brought up by a parent or an adolescent indicated a concern. It was unbelievable. At first, the physician said, "Oh, well, when do I call on the social worker?" I said, you will know. You will know when you want to do that. And ultimately, people said, "I never want to practice it a different way again," because there was this kind of, my colleague called it cross-fertilization, where the clinicians got better at asking about mental health issues, at managing them, and the social workers also got very good at understanding kids with chronic disease. So kids with significant asthma or diabetes and the mental health impacts of those things. So it was this wonderful team that developed out of that process. So I've been a big proponent of it ever since. And we were able to break even though we were a nonprofit in the true sense. Anyways, that's made me very enthusiastic about this.
I love that you've shared all that experience. You know, I think you've hit on quite a few points that our collaborative members, time and time again, we hear and resonate with our members is that number one, the financial sustainability piece is really important. Obviously, we have to keep the lights on for our practices. But the other thing is that in those collaborative models with the LCSWs and the physicians, both clinician members of the team get to benefit with their knowledge base, with their ability to care for patients with both chronic illness and with mental and behavioral illnesses. So I think it's a wonderful sort of microcosm as to what's going on, I think, in the broader scope, you know, with the kiddos, but also with the adults in my practice in oncology. I saw that as well. I got much more familiar with how to prescribe medications, et cetera, when it came time to do so. And so thank you for sharing that. And thank you for sharing your experiences. Moving into, you know, what your work has been with the AAP, how does the AAP view pediatric mental health and behavioral health integration? What are its priorities in this space?
That's a great question. The work of the Academy has, you know, has been going on for some time. One of the things that, you know, we really are trying to do with promoting mental health as health to primary care. So it's because there's a lot of what we do around mental health that does belong in primary care, not just pediatric primary care, actually also in specialty care. And you referenced that in your specialty as well. For example, I know that in my state, several of the pediatric hematologists have mental health folks in their care for people who have sickle cell disease, an obvious area where they would need that kind of support. So we're trying to get people to understand that mental and emotional well-being are critical components, right, of overall health, that healthy mental and emotional development is a process that occurs across the lifespan. Safe, stable, and nurturing relationships with caregivers and other trusted adults can foster resilience with these sorts of things, and that supporting the healthy mental and emotional development of children and adolescents is a critical step in addressing the national mental health crisis. So we have this crisis and people are in this mode for the kids who are coming in crisis, but trying to get people to think about that whole lifespan and how do we do the prevention piece of that too. We recognize that not everybody is going to have a fully integrated practice, right? So they might have other modalities where they collaborate and care. Maybe they have a really great referral and discussion relationship with a particular mental health professional in their community, but not located with them. Or maybe a lot of people in some of the big centers have a co-located person who's not there to do brief interventions, but is available as a consultant. And then of course, in pediatrics, we have the child psychiatry access programs. And you know that the American Academy of Pediatrics has been the recipient of funding to help states implement the pediatric mental health care access programs, which is our child psychiatry access programs. Those programs have not only psychiatrists, but psychologists and care managers. And so real time in practice, a person can be seeing a patient and call and be able to talk to folks about where do I refer? What's in my community? What are some of the things I should consider? What therapies are appropriate for this age group? That sort of thing. Or, you know, more specifically, maybe what, give me some guidance about medication, what's going on with this patient. So those child psychiatry access programs are now in 49 states and in our tribal territories. And we're really promoting that people utilize that, because if you are in a remote rural area, you may not have the luxury of mental health professionals who can be with you. So we recognize all of those collaborative models and they contribute to us being able to integrate. But very specifically, of course, we're very interested in helping people figure out how to do integration of mental health professionals as part of their team.
It sounds like the AAP is really trying to reach a broad audience with a variety of different models. And so I think that's so important because, you know, we practice in all different settings. And as you said, there are some rural settings that mental health care professionals are not available. So are there any sort of late breaking or key initiatives that AAP now has underway, knowing that you've already done so much work in this space?
It's a good question. You know, what came out of a lot of this interest in healthy mental development was the board formed the Council on Healthy Mental and Emotional Development, which I've been chairing for a couple of years. And we have as our role as a council to advise the board on what big things come next. So right now we have an initiative called Let's Talk, which is reaching out to pediatricians around the country with resources on how do you talk to families about mental health, and also engaging youth in what they want to hear from their pediatrician, that sort of thing. So very oriented towards preparing pediatricians for how they interact with families and kids on that. The other thing that's happening is we're developing a mental health education center, which is pulling together all those resources that the AAP has for practices for implementation. So for instance, how do you implement the competencies, which, you know, include the promotion, the prevention, and the, you know, early identification, and then the treatment piece, but also you know, the collaborative relationships you're going to need, the consult relationships you're going to need, what's your team, what's your practice culture like, what are you going to need for systems changes in your practice, that kind of thing. Now, personally, I would really love to be able to do practice transformation training with folks, some handholding. It would be great to be able to do more of that on a large scale. So that's a dream of mine that we'll get to be able to move in that direction. You know, the Behavioral Health Collaborative was very much trying to do that, right? Helping people by doing that handholding and supporting people with that work.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think practice transformation and systems changes can be hard, obviously. And I think that dovetails well with the next question I want to ask is, you know, in your work with both AAP and its membership, what kind of things have you heard that have been challenges when it comes time that, let's say, a physician wants to do behavioral health or mental health integration into their practices? Have you heard anything that's been sort of sticks in your mind as to a key challenge?
Oh, goodness, there's several challenges. I think that one of the fundamental challenges, we just kind of talk about it a little bit, is that spectrum of mental health issues in primary care, right? So the data exists that, you know, there are a number of school-aged and preschool-aged kids who have pretty decent functioning, but their parents are concerned. Or then there's kids across the age span who have trouble with their function, may not have a diagnosis, don't meet criteria for a disorder. What do I do with those? So I think those challenges are very real, and it's every day. If you ask people, what's your pain point? It's when those concerns come up and it's like, how do I address this kind of thing? So that's one, and that's pretty fundamental. The other ones obviously are ones that I already hinted at, the whole payment piece. How do I get paid for this? And what strikes me is from state to state, it varies, right? In Medicaid programs and insurers. So when you're even trying to do training for people, these folks over here have a policy in place that allows for that, but this one doesn't. And so our challenge for us to identify the, what are those policies and payment structures that are going to help people. That thing that I mentioned earlier, the non-specific diagnosis codes, mental health programs accepting what we call the DC 0-5, which is, you know, the DSM-5 does not apply to children under age 5 very well. And so it has a whole set of criteria and discussion for, you know, what are the issues for those kids. Identifying evidence-based treatments for kids that exist, right? That's a workforce issue. You may want to refer your school-age kid for trauma-focused CBT, and there's not somebody in your community that serves that age group. There are other things. I'm trying to think, you know, there are people who still are in places where you can't do same-day billing. Again, with the workforce, states, multiple places that people have to get credentialed in order to do this work. I mean, you're probably aware of a lot of these things. Payment parity is an issue. So often Medicaid payment is different than Medicare payment. So it's much more sustainable to take care of adults more than it is to take care of kids, things like that.
Yeah. And obviously we hear time and time again that the financial sustainability piece is difficult, but folks are finding different ways of implementing things that will work.
And I would say the benefits are so obvious. As I mentioned before, that cross-fertilization, that working as a team, the ability to do things, to not always think that, oh, I have to make a referral immediately, things that I can manage a lot of things on my own. I can help this person until a referral is available. That's really helpful. It reduces stigma, particularly for families. You know, I do want to say while we have to struggle with barriers, it doesn't take much for people to realize I never want to practice a different way again.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, with all the strides that we're making, I think, you know, there's now much more of a focus on whole person care as physicians, as clinicians. If we can keep that in mind, I think that really benefits our patients. And ultimately, we're much more satisfied as well. So, you know, I think you spoke a little bit about, you know, how the AAP has been a great partner with the AMA and the Behavioral Health Integration Collaborative. How have you seen in your work this sort of dynamic be beneficial for the AAP? And we know that the AAP has been certainly a wonderful collaborative member as well.
I think it was hugely helpful just in understanding, you know, clinic flow and how people do this, certainly. But it also really clarified the models And one of the things that I try to do with talking to folks in pediatrics, we had a big session on this at our last national convention. There's two models that get described, right? There's PCBH, which is primary care behavioral health. And then there's the collaborative care model, or the COCM. I try to emphasize with people, these represent a continuum of approaches, not alternative approaches. You don't do one and not the other necessarily. Because the person doing PCBH is the person I'm describing earlier. They're in clinic. They do that whole spectrum. They do promotion with patients. They do prevention. They do early identification. They do assessment. In our situation, they also helped us with referral and linkage to community resources. In the collaborative care model, then for that part of your population that have more complex needs, where you have a regular mental health clinician regularly reviewing patients with psychiatry and collaborating with the primary care clinician on the more complex patients, that is invaluable as well, right? And so ideally, I always say to folks, the ideal for you would be that you have that entire spectrum. I will say it's a big challenge in pediatrics because of the not so large number of child psychiatrists to be able to do those contracts with to consult on those more complex patients. But I think the collaborative was so helpful in developing, you know, clinic flow. How would this look? How do you set this up? And who are the patients that you are addressing? And like I say, in pediatrics, the great bulk of our work is going to be PCBH, promotion, prevention, early identification. But you can't forget the fact that we have also the need for those folks that have been identified as having a diagnosis. And how do I make sure they're getting the right evidence-based therapies? How do I make sure that their medication is appropriate if they're on medication? Again, my nirvana would be that you have that entire span in your practice.
Right. If we didn't have this behavioral and mental health professional shortage, that would be nirvana, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yes, it would be nirvana. I always make the joke, my daughter is a child and adolescent psychiatrist, so I contributed one to the...
There you go.
Yeah, no, it's an issue, but I do think these models that we're talking about really increase capacity, right?
Absolutely.
Because instead of me as a pediatrician referring every last kid who comes in with a concern and trying to get them on that, you know, waiting list, there's a large number that I can help and manage myself. And then the people I'm referring are the people who might have the greatest need, much more possible. So, and families and patients are happier too.
Right. No, absolutely. You know, in closing, do you have any pearls of wisdom that you'd like to share for our audience members? Maybe folks that are looking to start integrating behavioral and mental health into their practices or, you know, other things that you've seen in your work through AAP?
Well, I'd say one of my pearls is, again, the benefit to your practice. Patients are happier. The clinicians are much happier. I think we even saw a little tiny bump in, quote, productivity because of the fact that we could work as a team. Practice is already a little wild enough. So very, very helpful. That's definitely a pearl. I think the other thing to tell people is the power of that brief intervention, of being able to talk to a patient and do that brief intervention. And you don't have to be a mini psychiatrist or that sort of thing. I think we hear back from families how much they appreciate that. Sometimes they just really want to be able to talk about it. They may not even be ready to do anything that day, right? I think the other pearl is this approach of mental health is health. Again, the Academy is calling that healthy mental development. So we're really interested in that reframing the narrative about mental health. I think the key thing about that is mental health doesn't only refer to a diagnosis or an illness that has to be treated, but it's a developmental process that occurs across the lifespan. So it's not necessarily deficit-based, right? And it's not necessarily just the absence of symptoms. It's the ability to navigate the symptoms and do that work. Because the stigma exists, there's no question about it.
Well, great. Well, thank you for sharing those. I want to end by thanking you, Dr. Earls, for being our guest today. So thank you so much. It's been a wonderful conversation.
Yes, it's been great.
Check out the episode description to explore all of the resources mentioned in today's podcast. Thanks to all of our listeners for tuning in. Until next time, stay well.
Thank you for listening to this episode from the AMA's Steps Forward podcast series. Steps Forward can help put the joy back into medicine by offering real-world solutions to the challenges that your practice is confronting today. We look forward to you joining us next time on the AMA's Steps Forward podcast series, stepsforward.org.